to the coffee press with your favorite coffee brothers and sister Elaine. Brother Andrew, how are you?
Well, Brother Brendan, I'd have to say that I am just peachy. Just peachy today. Excited to have Sister Elaine on the podcast with us. Brother Brendan, how are you doing?
I am recovering from a lot of adventures over the last couple of weeks, so really happy to finally be settled back at home. And finally, Sister Elaine, how do we find you on this delightful day?
I'm very good. I had a nice, lazy weekend. I'm very happy to be here chatting with you lovely lads. And yeah, just very nice, very relaxed.
Today's brew, as always, is going to consist of our Life's Brew segment, where we talk about what we're reading, watching, playing, consuming in any way over the last week.
Once you've finished that, we'll serve you up with our Dark Roast, which is an extensive examination of the more profound concepts found in our favorite content.
And to cap it all off, we have our Espresso Roast, where the Brothers Coffee answer your questions lightning round style.
Finally, before we jump in, a warning. Adult content and spoilers await. This season, season two of The Coffee Press, if you missed it from our first episode, is going to consist of the same format we just went through, but this season we'll be talking about what makes entertainment entertaining. Why do we have the hobbies we have, and why do we enjoy consuming what we enjoy consuming?
And we also want to hear from you guys about what forms of entertainment you like the best, and why you like them. So feel free to drop us a line at The Coffee Press on Twitter or thecoffeepress@gmail.com.
Write your question down or your comment down and put it in a bottle and put that bottle in the ocean.
Yeah, send it through one of the old school bank vacuum, you know, launcher missile.
Pneumatic tubes.
The pneumatic tubes, as they call them in England.
Today we are joined by our dear friend, Sister Elaine. Sister Elaine has been one of my best friends since college, one of my favorite people to talk about our Dark Roast subject for today. So welcome, Sister Elaine.
Hello.
So we'll start it off with you, Sister Elaine. What has your mind been chewing on over the last week?
For the last like 6 weeks, I've had like an injury in my foot, so I haven't been able to do like my normal exercise the outside activities. So I've been consuming like a lot of things. I'm reading a couple books. I've watched Severance, which is probably my favorite thing right now in terms of like everybody needs to watch this show. It's a very good show. Dairy Girls. What else? Oh yeah, I'm watching The Boys right now.
Great kind of show.
Don't know how I feel about that yet. Oh yeah, I don't know how I feel about that yet. But yeah, lots of things all over the place. My history podcasts.
Elaine, you have a very unique spread when you say your like normal exercises. I know you've been dabbling in some more interesting stuff. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I've been doing capoeira since February, which is like a martial art from Brazil.
Dance fighting, right?
Historically, it was done, huh?
Like the dance fighting.
And so it was done historically by slaves. And so they have like music, they would do it to music and disguise it as dancing, so the masters wouldn't know that they were practicing martial arts. And it's really fun because like there's a lot of like cultural stuff that you learn in the classes, but then when you spar with each other, you're kind of like, I'm gonna kick you, but like you're trying to get to the level where you can see it coming, and like as you get better you can kind of speed it up, but you're not really meant to make contact. You're meant to kind of like, I know that you're going to dodge this kick, and it's your job to come up with something that I now have to dodge next. And it's a lot of like trying to like trip people up and throw them off balance and like sort of confuzzle them, and it's a lot of fun, and I've really enjoyed like the friends that I've made doing it. But I haven't been able to do it for like 6 weeks now because my stupid janky foot. The cultural aspect of it is really cool, and like the way that it's practiced, like a UNESCO protected like art form thing, and so there are different schools that teach it in different ways, and like the schools get quite culty a little bit. Like, I think a lot of martial arts is kind of culty, to be honest. But the one that I've been doing it with is a school called Sul de Bahia. And I did my first belt exam back in May, and I had to like play the drums and sing a song and like do all these moves, because it's very important that you're learning like the musical aspect of it, and you've got to learn some like Portuguese along the way, as well as like the like physical aspect of it as well, which was kind of fun, but it was a little intimidating.
I think that's cool. I think that, I mean, so like yoga, it, for me, is kind of the thing that's been my physical activity. And you know, I don't know if it makes this culty or not, but it's been encouraged to, you know, dive into some of like, there's like a whole language of Sanskrit you're kind of encouraged to know about. And, you know, there's meditation, and it's more than just like the physical aspects to like, to be like a real yogi bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you get a lot out of it doing that kind of stuff. It's good to know where these things come from.
Was it Barcelona that you went for your...
Milan.
Milan.
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool. Yeah.
It was a whirlwind weekend, and I think that's where the foot problem started, because I just was like stomping and squatting and jumping for like a straight up full weekend.
That'll do it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brother Andrew, what have you... what has your mind been consuming over the last... X amount of time?
So I have recently been trying to find a good one player video game that I can kind of invest some time in. And I've had a little bit of trouble. Xbox Game Pass is probably one of the best opportunities to explore a lot of different types of video games. You can, you know, it's a 15 bucks a month, and you have access to, you know, I don't even know how many, probably over 100 titles, and they keep rotating, so there's, you know, new stuff all the time seemingly, and you can just download it, and if you don't like it, delete it and move on to the next one. So in that voyage, I've rediscovered a couple of oldies, and I know Brendan touched on this in our last podcast about video games, but Morrowind, the Elder Scrolls, what was it?
Three. Because you came into that journey right after that, right? Because you played
Oblivion.
Yeah,
I probably sunk the most time into Oblivion Skyrim's a close second. I think I probably spent the most time in Oblivion. And if I remember correctly, I think Oblivion was relatively poorly received.
It just like, it just has like, they did their best to kind of up the game, particularly with like facial graphics, which just it does kind of move the baton a little bit further down the field, but then like all of the fate, you've got this like really weird, like uncanny valley surprise, and they're like none of the rest of their face moves except like their eyebrows. Yeah. I think at least for me, Morrowind was so life changing. Oblivion was a little
it fell a little flat compared, and I feel like you had a particularly spiritual experience with Morrowind, and like it was because it was it was almost the correct me if I'm wrong, the first of its kind that you really invested a lot of time in.
Certainly for me. Yeah. And we talked about this last time. You don't have to. So for more information, see episode one. Yeah, just because it was so like it was so big and it was so hard. It was so big and it was so hard. And it was so big and it was so hard. And it was so hard. And it was so there was just so much like depth. I can still feel like being in a city in Morrowind made you feel like your first time going to like New York City.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, there's like this is just so overwhelming, but in a pleasant way, right? Like in a how much opportunity and excitement. Absolutely spiritual is the right word, is to say like this feels like I'm reading a really, really, really good book.
Yeah, and so I downloaded that, and I've played through a little bit of it. I'm having a hard time for some reason really getting super duper deep into into that style of game right now for some reason. And it happened maybe a couple months ago when I downloaded Skyrim, and just the overall, I have forgotten so many things about the game that I used to know. And so therefore I just feel a little lost sometimes. So that I still have it, and I'll pick it up again, I'm sure. But I feel like I need to maybe do a little research about, you know, certain builds and all that stuff that I've just forgotten over the years. But so I downloaded that, and then there was another game called Deep Space, which is a horror kind of jump scare game where you, like, you're in space and there's this race of, you know, your standard, you're in space and there's like an alien entity that's trying to kill you. So, you know, pretty standard from that aspect, but it's fun. And what was the last game the last one was Red Dead Redemption 2, which is a Rockstar game. Very similar to Grand Theft Auto, but it just is in, you know, 1895.
This is not going to surprise either of you, in that the first time I played, my boyfriend that I was dating at the time bought me Red Dead Redemption. And when I tell you, I played it for probably 5 hours, and I could probably get back into it, but for 4 of those 5 hours, I did this. I did.
Wait, can I guess? Can I guess? Did you ruthlessly slaughter everybody that you could find?
So I did the same. I did the same mission over and over again. Where you are driving a cart full of people. Like, to safety, right?
Off the cliff.
Over and over.
For 4 hours.
Just watch their, like, or listen to their, like, exclamations. Like, I think we're going.
I can't believe this is happening.
Oh my god, that reminds me of Katamari. Do you remember Katamari?
Oh, that's not the one where you have, like, the big ball and you roll around?
And, like, the people go, oh! And you, like,
it reminds me of Halo, Brendan, when we used to just kill all the Marines with us. And one of the exclamations was, I can't believe this is happening. And that has stuck with me and Brendan for so long, because that is just a hysterical exclamation to put in the game when Master Chief goes AWOL and starts murdering all of his own soldiers, you know?
Like running away, which, you know, is really affirming to us as gamers, because that means the developers were like, there is going to be some crapped out son of a bitch out there that is just going to start killing all the Marines. So we have to, you know, this is something we really need to account for.
So this one's for you.
Right. It's a nod and a wink to us psychopaths.
Exactly. And listen, believe me, in the time that I've spent in Red Dead Redemption 2 so far, there has been there's been a lot of casualties. A lot of people that were good people didn't do anything wrong. You know, have met an untimely demise.
Pour one out for all those innocent, you know,
for all those innocent people.
But, you know, it's not like other Rockstar games where you can just do, you know, XXR1 circle whatever to like reset your, you know,
wanted level.
No, those people stay dead, and everybody, and those people, and like everybody stays pretty fucking pissed off at you.
Yes.
You're like an outlaw.
Yeah, no, it like doesn't go away. But my favorite part is so far is like you can just mass murder everybody in a town. Like every and then the you know, quote unquote lawmen will just keep coming again and again and again, just similar like the police did in Grand Theft Auto. Like they just keep coming. And so then all you have to do is walk down to the post office and you pay a guy $5, and he's like, good enough for me. Have fun.
All is like forgiven.
All is forgiven. Yeah, like, you know, like he's like, you know, you have a good night. You know, all right, thanks, man. But it's cool. It's a cool game. There's a lot you can do, and it's visually, you know, quite good in terms of the landscapes and stuff that are in the game. The mechanics seem a little sluggish at times, and that's something I'll have to get over. But in terms of, you know, the quests and missions and everything that you can do, it seems pretty cool. So that's probably going to be, you know, there's probably going to be some time invested in that, especially because that one wasn't on Game Pass and I had to pay real money for it.
Another quick dive into last week's episode, but like it is one of the most enjoyable things. And we talked about this explicitly, right? As far as like in like Tony Hawk, where like you get lost, like the thing that you ended up getting lost the most in the game is probably the thing that they put the least amount of thought into. Right.
Correct.
Like where, yeah. You know, where one of the most enjoyable things about Grand Theft Auto, I guess, was it 3 that we played the most, Andrew?
Yeah, that was the original, if you will.
Yeah, where it's like you wake up, right, like at the hospital or whatever, and like you're like, ah, fresh start, right? And like I think the thing that we did the most is 2 codes, right? First, arm all civilians. Okay, so everybody got like a flamethrower or a rocket launcher or just like knives or whatever. And then and then you turned on like anarchy mode, where everybody starts to like fight each other.
Civil unrest mode.
The character hasn't even like walked a step out the hospital, and you can just all of a sudden watch the city just burn around you. People are like, finally, like, oh, and then just like ambulance flamethrowers and people like yelling and
No. The third cheat that completed that picture was flying cars. So you'd like the screen would like, you know, dissolve out from black to like to you standing on the steps of the hospital or the police station or whatever. And then so you'd see not only complete and utter anarchy on the streets, but then you just see a car just flying by in the air, and mainly cop cars, because they'd just be just taking off every time they accelerated, and they're just flying everywhere. And that's, I don't know if I ever did a single mission in that game.
I couldn't tell you any of the names of the characters your objective was or anything like that. But that 5-minute discussion between the developers at Rockstar,
yeah,
man, really provided the coffees with just
hours.
I am extremely excited. And this is because of Brother Chase, who Elaine and I know from college, but about Sandman.
Oh yeah, I've been meaning to watch that.
Is that
on
good?
Netflix?
Yeah.
I turned it on, and I gotta be honest, it was the night that I had finally flown home from Phoenix. So like, I turned it on and really enjoyed the up until the point where I fell asleep. So I can't. This is fascinating. But yeah, I'm really excited. It's a Neil Gaiman, and I really enjoy his stuff generally, and like, which has been really cool. And then just to show how fucking nerdy Brendan is, I've been following this author named Drew Hayes for quite a while, and I think I've told both of you about this like free service called Hoopla that's kind of like Audible, but it has like a smaller selection, but it's from the library, so it's free. And I just kind of randomly stumbled across this book called NPCs 5 years ago or so. And the premise of this is that there's a group of people playing Dungeons and Dragons, or they don't call it Dungeons and Dragons, but it's obviously Dungeons and Dragons. And all of their characters die like right at the beginning of their quest. And the NPCs in the fictional world have become sort of self-aware. And they have to like take up the mantle of the dead adventurers.
So a little Westworldy.
It just ties in a bunch of like, and it's nothing like seismic. There's no like insane epicness. I mean, it does get kind of like it's been such a delightful gem to have found, right? And now I'm like part of, you know, like if he comes, if Drew Hayes comes to a con, like a Comic-Con or something close, I will absolutely show up. But he released his most recent book called Noble Roots maybe a month ago, or at least the audio version of that book about a month ago. And I have had so much going on. I had a bachelor party last week. I had a work conference the week after it that I have just like, it's been so, like, I've just been like, okay, whoever it is I'm talking to, like for work or even bachelor party, I'm like, stop talking so I can go and listen to this book. I really just, it's been, so I've gotten through like the first third of it, but I am so excited over this next week to get to like finish it. It's, I just love it.
I love that concept for a book. In terms of,
yeah,
that's just a fantastic concept because you just never think about
the
it.
The NPC thing.
Yeah.
It feels kind of like Minecraft-y, right? Where it's like Minecraft was just some graduate student's, you know, final project for their, you know, whatever graphic gaming thing. This was like a creative writing student's, you know, thesis, right? Like, what if the NPCs had to become the main characters?
Yeah.
Right. And then you just kind of extrapolate from there. And it's just a fun little sandbox to play around in.
Yeah, that's very cool. I might give that a try.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. Can I ask, Andrew, how far are you in The Boys? So, are you like all caught up?
So I am currently not caught up. When I said great show, you know, it was, it might have been a little premature because what I did is I watched season one and then I can't remember if I finished season two.
Okay, you're farther along than me.
Yeah, so I liked season one. I liked season one enough to go to season two, if that makes sense. So like I enjoyed season one. I started season two and then I can't remember if I finished it or fell off. I want to say I didn't finish it because I think the third season just came out. Did it not?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And so I haven't even ventured to season three yet because I'm pretty sure I haven't finished season two. It's something my girlfriend and I have discussed about restarting, but there's a couple of things that we're kind of dabbling in to see if we like it right now. One of which, this is, I guess you could consider this a light roast topic, but one of the shows that we started watching is The Terminal List on Amazon Prime. And I thought it was going to be a just run and gun kind of like new Chris Pratt kind of action. It's like he's a Navy SEAL. I thought it was going to be something like that. But it's actually like conspiracy, thriller, you know, psychological thriller type show. There's definitely plenty of action in it, which I think is well done, you know, enough. But the actual overall plot is pretty conspiratorial, and I like that a lot. And
lots of intrigue.
Yeah, intrigue. It's very, yeah. It's not cut and dry because it could be. Yeah, it could have been just a regular kind of run and gun type action series, but it's really good. And we haven't finished the season yet, but I would give it a shot if you like that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
I was asking about The Boys because I thought, like, I really want to like it. Like, it's like, I like, does the tone kind of get more, I guess, intentional as it gets on?
Yeah.
The first season, I feel like it's like, I'm really enjoying like the gratuitous violence a bit and like mm-hmm. how it kind of like sort of swings its way into like being almost goofy and camp. But then it gets like so dark, but like, is that part of the campiness? And then sometimes the writing, like the dialogue is really cringy. And I feel like, is this part of the campiness or is it just bad writing? And I feel like because I think I've watched the first, maybe just the first episode of the second season. And I feel like as the first season has gone on, it's kind of gotten a bit more settled in what it is a little bit. And I'm enjoying it a little more, but I don't know if I like want to keep watching it that much.
I was in the same boat. Like, I wanted to like it because a lot of tons of people I talked to were like, "Oh, it's so good." Same. So,
yeah.
So, and like, there were definitely parts in the first season where I was like, "Okay, like, this is a good show. Like, I want to know more about what's going on." And then I got into the second season, and something about it, I felt like it lost its way a little bit.
You just lost your momentum with it.
For sure. And to be honest with you, it's been a while. It's been probably over a year since I finished season two or fell off in the middle of season two or whatever it was. So I don't remember a ton about it, but and about why I kind of fell off, but something apparently didn't keep me hooked enough to complete season two. And like, and the reason I think I didn't complete it is because I didn't have that moment, you know, when you finish a show and it's the last episode of the last season that's currently out, and you have that reflection period where you kind of digest what you watch and you're like, okay, like, you know, and for shows that you really like, that like you know, you either already know or you're expecting that there's going to be a following season. And so that's pretty much why I know I didn't finish it, because I didn't have any kind of reflection after the fact about, like, you know, did I like that season more or less than the first one or anything like that. So
yeah,
but it's cool. It's got some, I like the action, and like you said, the gratuitous violence is awesome.
Fun.
But something about the
just
story,
like, exploding.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Something about the story and just the way that they were doing it kind of just, I lost interest.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't take that much these days for things to be like, it's not bad. It just wasn't like what I wanted to put time into that.
For sure.
You know?
I mean, this is a theme of last season, right? Is to say that, like, you know, it's kind of one of those, like, fool me once, shame on you. No, me, right?
With gusto.
Know, whatever. Just, yeah. Really confident about that. But whatever, you know, like, is to say, like, you know, I have invested significantly in, and, you know, I think that the obvious example of Game of Thrones, which we have to talk very briefly about House of the Dragon, which I actually think comes out today as we record this podcast. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Rings of Power comes out in like two or three weeks, right?
So, oh, wow.
I'm super excited about that. Yeah, but I think that it brings up, especially for us, you know, kind of crotchety old fanboys and girls, right, is to say, like, I've invested in things and then regretted investing in them.
Yeah, I'm kind of holding off on both of those things until I hear about them, especially Lord of the Rings. I'm probably going to watch The Ring of Power. I'm probably going to watch regardless.
Same.
But I think I'm not letting myself get excited about it yet. But the freaking Game of Thrones one, I'm just like, we'll see.
Yeah. Andrew, have you watched any more of Obi-Wan since our last discussion?
I haven't watched a minute of Obi-Wan.
Okay.
And I not because I don't want to.
Not 1 minute.
Not because I don't want to. It's just I don't have Disney Plus, and I, you know, I asked our community. I begged our community.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. I'll hook you up, Andrew.
Oh, okay.
We'll sort it out. We'll sort it out. I feel like I should. I feel morally obligated to share my password.
And also,
people,
you know, I also thought, like, maybe I should just, you know, suck it the fuck up and get Disney Plus for a month and then be out another $10.
Well, yeah. I think the only reason I have it is because I feel like there's nothing you can do at this point that it doesn't come with. Like, you buy a fucking, like, a popsicle, and it's like, oh, it comes with
Disney Plus. You get a free month of Disney Plus.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I think it came with either, like, my Verizon or my CenturyLink or something like that, and it's just like, yep, here, have some Disney Plus. So,
yeah, I'm that way with HBO Max. I think it's either my internet or whatever subscription comes with a free HBO Max. But yeah, either I'll get it from Elaine, or I'll just, you know, grow the fuck up and pay for Disney Plus for a month and watch it and see how crappy it was.
I bet you guys are never going to watch Severance because it's on Apple TV. Has anybody gotten on that yet? I am not watching it on Apple TV. I am watching it through other methods.
illegal methods.
But...
in case this shows up in court,
as you can tell by our discussion and really celebration of gratuitous violence in both video games and in television, we are nothing but ethical and have
correct.
Great amount of integrity.
Moral standard here.
I think we've run out of emails to do free trials with for Apple TV.
It's got some good stuff. Ted Lasso, I thought was really good.
That's what we got it for.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. Have you guys watched Black Mirror? I don't know if it's as big out there as it is over here.
Black Beer or Black Beard, like the pirate?
Black Mirror.
Oh, Black Mirror. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
So Severance is like that. The star is the guy, the love interest in Parks and Rec. The actor's Adam Scott. Ben Wyatt. Ben Wyatt is the star. But it's like a psychological thriller where there's been a procedure that has been invented where you get a chip and put in your brain where you don't remember anything about your personal life when you're at work. And when you leave, you don't remember anything about what you do at work. So it basically creates like two different versions of you.
That's a wild concept.
It is insane. I watched it because here's the other thing. I cannot watch stressful or dramatic shows with Ashley. Because I think because of his job, because he works in a hospital and shit, I think he's just like, sitcoms only, give me more Frasier. and so when I want to watch something that's like a thriller thing, I just watch it. And then if he's like in the room and seems interested, I'll watch it again with him. And
we have to introduce who Ashley is.
Oh yeah, Ashley's my husband.
The copy press cast of characters.
Yeah. Ashley's my husband. It's not just an NPC. He's the English guy that I live with. So yeah, he's not just an NPC. He's right now playing Euro Truck Simulator. Guess what that game is.
Does it simulate being in a Euro truck?
Yeah, well, you're a truck driver.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you're making deliveries around Europe. Oh, he's been playing that all day. He's like, I got deliveries to make, guys. Don't bump me too much. But yeah, so like if I want to watch something dramatic or stressful, I'll put it on just for myself, and if he happens to catch some of it and wants to like watch it as well, then like we'll arrange that and we'll watch it together. But like Stranger Things, not a chance. I just watched that by myself. Game of Thrones, wasn't interested at all. But Severance, he was like catching bits of it. He really liked Parks and Rec, so I think he was really like, whoa, it's Ben, what's he doing? He looks different. He looks old and sad, because that's a big part of the tone of this. I was watching it with him, and I was like, you know when you're watching, it's like with, like when you were talking about watching Game of Thrones, and you could tell Brendan's just sitting there like, I want to say things so bad, but I can't, but I'm so enjoying this ride that you're going on. That's how it was watching Severance with Ashley. Cause like there are some crazy fucking it's very, very good. And it's very like, there's a lot of like cerebral like ideas in it. And like, oh my God, think about how it could be used this way or that way. And it's like, oh, it doesn't sound dystopian, but it is when you think about it. It's a fun
show.
Okay,
so just so we don't get sued in court, while you share with me your Disney Plus account information, then just, let me know the password to the website that you're using, for that show. Because that sounds pretty interesting. And it sounds legit.
Yeah. I'll let you know. I'll let you onto my
sure. Yeah, and it sounds completely legit.
100%.
Okay, so I have two really like important questions. So first of all, actually, if we have any actual Euro truck drivers in our listening audience, very, very curious as to your opinions on this video game that simulates your profession. Because that, to me, sounds a little bit like a video game about going to the DMV.
Oh, well, dude, have you seen the other?
I feel like that's what it sounds like
as
well.
Have you seen the other simulators? Like, there is
the flight simulator is really fun to watch.
Flight simulator is cool. Like, in my opinion, the coolest, most enjoyable one. But then there's Farming Simulator, there's lawn mowing simulator.
Yes, there's a tractor one as well. There's
a simulator. There is a power washing simulator.
Is there doing the dishes
there,
simulator?
There will be soon, because I mean they just came out with power washing simulator. So like, yeah. And listen,
another important.
No,
is it fun?
No, it's not. It's fucking work. It's tedious work.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah. Like.
I think Euro Truck Simulator is kind of fun because the challenge is in how am I, like, is in the maneuvering the 16-wheel, the 16-wheeler.
Can
basically.
You murder and, the NPCs and cause a horrific accident?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, good.
So, I was gonna say, can you fill your truck up with innocent people and then drive off the side of the cliff?
I think you have assigned like you get like coal and stuff, and you have to like take the coal to Belfast or whatever. But I think like you once you get levels up, you can get like toxic or hazardous materials, and then you get you can like damage your truck, and so like you'll like lose like money on your sale if like you damage your truck too much. And there's a guy that Ashley plays with that like basically ignores the fact that it's a game about like doing little jobs. He plays it like a monster truck racing game.
Of course, as anybody should.
So
you failed the mission because you drove your truck full of hazardous materials into an orphanage.
Can you commit a catastrophic chemical spill in the middle of a major city?
I feel like you can. I'm pretty sure you can. Like, you have the hazardous materials. You have the ability to flip over a truck. I mean, I've played it for half an hour total, so I'm not exactly sure, but... I mean, why wouldn't he be able to? It's a simulator. It's got to have like an accurate simulation. Absolutely.
By the way, based on the coffee press's luck so far, there will be a catastrophic chemical spill.
Yes, there will be
tomorrow. Or no, not tomorrow. The day that we release this episode, there'll be some horrifying, you know, chemical spill.
Callous and awful. Yeah.
You can count on us. On today's Dark Roast, we're going to talk a little bit about history and why it's something that all three of us are really super interested in and enjoy discussing at length. So we'll talk about a little bit about some of the history that we enjoy study or learn about or read about, listen about, etc. Then we'll talk at a bigger level as to like why is it interesting for us to engage with this concept. So for me, a little bit, I feel like reading a mystery novel, right? Where it's like, by the end of the mystery novel, like a well-written mystery novel, you're like, oh my God, it all makes sense. Because all of the clues that have been sort of scattered earlier in the book kind of like tie neatly into the way that the book ends. But the way that the book ends for us is literally a present day.
Correct.
I understand how things work today and languages and culture and... even the way that like our geographical maps are drawn, like why countries' borders are the way they are, et cetera, is because this stuff that I'm learning about and it like clicks into place the more pieces of data I get.
Yeah, history is like a puzzle where every piece has been laid in a specific and precise order to get to where we have that where we are right now. It's always crazy to think about if just one piece was different, you know, how different our world would be today. And the term we always hear is history repeats itself, and how can we learn from that? And that is a big reason why we like it so much, is because we can learn from it and we can try to fix mistakes of the past.
But too late though.
Or we can just learn about it because of our own personal pleasure. It's very interesting and very cool for some people. And I know, Brendan, I know that you personally have, and when I say recently, maybe over the last 4 or 5 years, you've had a pretty big fascination with Roman history.
Oh, that's all because of Elaine. Yeah, it's because of this this podcast that...
Such a good podcast.
I don't know how you stumbled upon it, Elaine, but you're the one who introduced it to me, and it's The History of Rome. The aptly titled History of Rome by Mike Duncan. Shout out to Mike Duncan. Honestly, yes. a little bit of one of the many inspirations for the coffee press.
Yeah, I think he's inspired a lot of people. He's like a standard of history podcasting. I feel like he's like the gold standard.
But it's been really fun and cool to like, he has honed his craft. Like if you listen to it from the very first episode, it's like him kind of like bumbling around and saying like, oh, like I enjoy this and here's a little bit about it, whatever. And then you fast forward to episode like 350. And it's awesome.
But I think his structure has always been so tight. Like, it's like, I'm telling this story and how like A gets, like how we get from A to B. And I think it kind of like what you guys are saying, how it like, you're filling in the gaps, even like of how we got here. And like, I think, especially with Rome and us being like, people descended from Europeans and cultures descended from Europeans, it provides this weird sense of identity. Like there's a lot of stuff that we do in our culture and our society that we do because the Romans did it. But like when you learn about Rome, it's like learning about another planet. Like it's so different and it's so unrecognizable, but in the same way it's so recognizable. And I think he does a really good job of kind of like immersing you in a story and connecting you to it as well as kind of like how it's like part of probably your history or you know, wherever you are in the world. Like you have been affected by Rome in some way, probably.
It's almost like when you get so deeply immersed into a certain, piece of history like that, it's almost like reading or watching or, you know, listening to just a really well written movie or show or book. And you're like, wow, that was a fantastic book. And then it doubles down on that. And it's like, well, it's even cooler because believe it or not, it actually happened.
Yeah. And like some of that stuff, like you couldn't write this. Like some of the stuff is so crazy and bananas. And like how, like, I don't know, with the history of Rome, I haven't listened to that particular podcast in a long time, but I remember like hearing about one emperor who basically like the empire was a mess, like it had broken apart and then he was kind of trying to put it back together again. I think it's Diocletian who's like this, and he's just like sort of by force of personality changes the empire. He changes how the emperor is seen from like being like, you know, the first of equals to like, I'm actually a living god, like a god, guys, for real. You just sit down and shut up. And he like, he sort of gets the republic or he gets the empire back on track by making laws saying like, if your dad made shoes, then you're going to make shoes and your son's going to make shoes because we can't have all this moving about and like changing of things. We need everybody to just sit down and shut up and do what I say. Don't charge more than this for a shirt, god damn it. And like through just that force of personality, he kind of puts it all back together and lays the foundation for what then becomes feudalism, which is crazy. Like that's how serfdom works and stuff like that. But the connection makes perfect sense, but it's just this one guy. If that one guy didn't exist, would we have kings and queens and knights and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah. So I have a question about the podcast that you're referring to, the Roman history one. How is it structured? Because I listened to a World War II podcast, which I really did like, but it was kind of like a... And I know that World War II it's still a lot, but it's easier to do in terms of this structure. Like, this guy almost went day by day.
Which one was this?
But I believe it's just called the History of World War II podcast.
Okay.
So nice. I can't remember who the creator is. And I haven't listened to it in a while, but I think I must have gone through 200 plus episodes back when I was still going into the office. I was pretty heavy on podcasts because it's pretty much all I did while I was working. It's just I had a podcast rolling.
Yeah, I do that too.
But so he kind of went day by day in like what happened and everything like that. How was the Roman history kind of structured?
So I think at the beginning, it's very obviously you're dealing with a sort of significant lack of sources. And there's a lot of like, this is a story that comes from that time. It might be true. It might not. You know, was Romulus raised by a wolf? Probably not. This is what that could have been like a reference to. So he kind of does that. But what he does is he sort of breaks it down into eras. But he does try to keep it like a chronological narrative. Like it is a narrative history of Rome. So I think if you're able to break down like the world wars into day by day, like you can obviously do that because you have all of these sources. So I think he does it in a similar way where he like, but obviously like at the beginning, especially like really, really early on in Rome, it's like, this is what happened over the next 20 or 30 years, we think. And so he talks about the different stories that came out of that era. And like, obviously once you get up to like, Julius Caesar, you kind of hang out there for a mm-hmm. long time because we're going through things at a much slower rate because we have all of this sources and all of this stuff. That guy is currently doing a history of political revolutions. It's very thorough and very good. That there's stuff there that goes day by day. Like he's doing Russia right now. And like the 1917, I think, has like way more episodes than like other there's episodes where I'll skip, he'll go through like 5 years in one episode, and then there's 1917 where like one episode will cover like a week or less.
I mean, just based on the one proximity in time that we were to that event or those events, and then also just the range of years that you're covering, you know, it's going to have to be structured a little different,
and like how much stuff happens in like that year, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There's another podcast that I think I've shared with both of you that, you know, if you get it, but it's called The Emperors of Rome, and it's by an Australian university. So, I mean, of course, they could be reading the dictionary and I'd still be like, this is fascinating. their accents are just so delightful. They could absolutely be reading my CBS review.
Some of my closest friends out here are Australians, and I really appreciate that they don't sound too Australian.
It's delightful, but it's interesting. Like it's similar. It's like, and I think it's also, it's like, it's a well, quote unquote, that like you can always draw from, right? Is to say, like, it's literally the same, very, very similar content, right? Or at least we're covering the same emperor, right? That Mike Duncan covers. But they're covering it more from like a biographical perspective of this emperor.
Ooh.
Yeah, of like the particular emperor. And then, of course, that does still tell the story of Rome, but it's not necessarily of Rome itself. It's more about like, where were they born? How were they raised? So on and so forth. And I love the fact that, like what you said earlier, Elaine, as far as like sources, it is so interesting. Because like they make one statement, like such and such was born here, and then like that, and you think that that could be the end of the thought, but no, we have to then say, well, we think that this person was born here for the following reasons. This historian wrote this, and that historian wrote that, so we're going to deduce that this is what actually happened, right? Like it's and
the historiography of it. That's always cool.
That discussion is so interesting to hear because you're like, we actually don't really know what happened, honestly, right? We really don't know what happened. We have certain puzzle pieces, and those puzzle pieces all have varying degrees of confidence, if you will, right? Like this is being written 200 years after the fact, still ancient history, but 200 years after the actual events, or it's being written by an opposing political faction, or it's being written by a conquering army, right? So they have these maybe impetus to change or to frame it in a certain way, right? So it's like there's all this unpacking you can do to like to say, here's what we think happened, but like it is just as important to say why we think it happened that way as to the actual events.
Yeah, I think that's really, I wonder if you are coming across this listening to stuff about World War I and World War II, Andrew, because I know a lot of the sources are like biographies of like, that were written by like generals and memoirs and stuff like that, written by people after the fact. And I feel like I've, from what I've heard, it's a lot of them like trying to cover their ass or like defend themselves or like explain like this is why this went wrong or this went right and it's my, like I need to take the credit for it really. This other guy takes credit, but he's like, you know, he's a joke. Don't listen to him.
So you bring up a great point that I actually just recently had watched a couple of, you know, and when I say watched a couple of YouTube videos, I went into a fucking black hole about this stuff. Because there's no middle ground for me. I either don't watch anything or I just like get sucked into some random piece of information. But there was a YouTube video that was about what the Japanese teach their students about the happenings in World War II.
I think that stuff is so interesting.
And there was a video of what did Germany teach their, what does Germany teach their students about World War II? And then what Poland does, and then like what Russia does. It is very easy to just think about, you know, what we learned in school, what we learn from, you know, things that are published by Americans in America about like, and we kind of think that we have a pretty firm grasp of like what happened, right? And I'm not saying that's true or not true, but I'm saying, you know, if you think about what other countries or other people will or cultures will put in their history books about how the events unfolded of these certain times in history. And just a quick snippet of the one from the video I watched on Japan, it just glossed over a lot of things. For example, Pearl Harbor was the attack on Pearl Harbor is made to be a last ditch effort that Japan had to take to avoid total and all out warfare and would lose a ton of human lives. The United States was so tyrannical and evil and all that stuff. So like, and that's just a fascinating point to think about is, you know, history is different all around the world. But you know, will you ever really know exactly what happened?
Have you, Andrew, have you ever listened to Dan Carlin?
I have not.
He's done a few on World War I. He's currently doing one on World War II, but it's World War II. I think it's like 6 episodes or 5 episodes now. Each of the episodes are like 4-ish hours long or more. And it's about World War II from Japan's point of view specifically. And so he talks about like the Japanese culture, the Sino-Japanese war that happens during what we call the interwar years. So like Japan invading China and stuff. Then he talks about Pearl Harbor, and then he talks about like different naval battles that happened between the US and Japan and like how the two countries saw each other and stuff like that. But the way he structures things is very much like, it's less about chronology and more about like immersion. So there's a lot of like first person accounts and a lot of like, imagine you're there and like putting you into the scene and stuff like that. And it's quite like cinematic. And I don't know.
That's awesome.
And he does a lot of really cool World War One and World War Two stuff. That's like quite deep. His World War One stuff, I think, is probably some of my favorite things that he's done.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Because Elaine is one of my most trusted sources of you know, content to consume, I gave it a try. And remind me, Elaine, what's the name of the podcast?
Hardcore History.
And oh God, is it hardcore?
Oh God, like, yeah, it's yeah, like
I couldn't quite get into it because I was like, this is uncomfortable. I'm
yeah
now to consume this. But it is good, I guess. And to the point we made earlier, to say like there's a probably all of history is pretty fucking hardcore, but because we have such it because of its recency, like we have really graphic accounts that we dive real deep into with Mr. Carlin.
Some of my favorite stuff of his is the World War One descriptions when he talks about like different battles and like what kind of characterized the battles for the people that were in them. And one of the like burned into my skull things that he talks about is like the mud at Passchendaele and how like it's not just like walking through sticky mud, it's like eating people alive mud. It sounds so horrifying. It sounds like something in a movie. And he talks about like if you could think of like the worst places on earth throughout all of history to just be like injected into, like this is probably one of them, like certain Roman battles, like ancient warfare battles, I think would be up there because like everybody's just getting stabbed. Yeah, it's kind of a mind fuck to think about.
I will listen to that because that's very interesting to me, and I'm excited to listen to that. There's another YouTube creator that I believe the name of it is called Oversimplified. They take a piece of history which is there's a lot to it. There's a lot to digest and a lot that goes into it, and they put it into maybe a 15-minute YouTube video, and they use like cartoons and all this stuff that I think it's all hand drawn and done by these people, which is really excellent. But it just makes it bite sized. So it's kind of like tasting different ice cream flavors at Baskin Robbins, because you can get a quick 15-minute hit of what transpires in that historical event, and then if there has been things that I've liked, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. I want to know more about that. And so then I'll look for, further, whether it's podcasts, shows, movies, or whatever that's about that instance that I can learn more about. Then I dive into it. You know, there's just a lot of things that I've, watched these videos on, and I recommend you guys do it too, because they do a good job. And, some of it's funny, some of it's, pretty serious, but it's a cool, just quick hit. It's a bunch of highlights and all that stuff, and gives you a good understanding of what really happened.
Because Andrew, you use the word snippet, I feel compelled to
No Domini.
Yeah, we both Andrew and I. So this gets back to kind of what you were talking about, or what we were talking about earlier, as far as like how history is framed to you as a member of a particular society or culture, right? Which is education. How are we taught our own history? And both Andrew and I had a delightful teacher in high school named Mr. Glass. Just shout out to Mr. Glass. Oh, dude.
Shout out Mr. Glass.
World history, I think 10th grade. And, just really made it come alive and just kind of pulled a bunch of stuff together. But like that is, I think, how most of us, I can't imagine anybody that is not introduced to history, unless you have really engaged, I guess, parents or family in history. Like most of us were first introduced to the concept and the importance of history in like our education. And like most other things, at least for Brendan, is to say like I kind of disregarded, it's not the right word, but like I didn't. It's only when I came back to it as an adult and said, like, this is fascinating, and not just fascinating, but, like, important, that I all of a sudden remembered that we talked about Alexander the Great in Mr. Glass's class. And I'm like, wow, this is huge, right? This is incredible, right? This, it's fascinating. And then the other thing that I feel compelled to talk about is actually to pull back in our favorite topic of video games. One of the other kind of histories that I love is Japanese history, right? Absolutely. Ugh. Just fascinating, fascinating stuff. And I think that one of the reasons that I fell into it was because of this random game I played the shit out of called Shogun Total War. And it was a video game that took place in the Warring States period of Japanese history. And it was really fairly, now that I've gone and listened to hours of podcasts and watched YouTube videos and stuff, it was fairly accurate from the people, like the people involved and the names of the different clans and the different, echelons of society, warrior, samurai and shoguns and et cetera, just, it's awesome, right? It's like, and I didn't realize when I played the video game that I was legitimately digesting history.
Yeah, excellent game.
Yeah.
Absolutely excellent game.
And then Elaine and I recently fell into, Elaine more so than I did, but a book called The Poppy Wars. And I listened to the first one, and it was a decent book, right? I wouldn't not recommend it, but
I liked the first book, and I history nerded out over it for sure,
right?
But I felt like the main character was not a lot of redeeming qualities, and like you kept being like, it was told from like kind of a first person perspective. It wasn't like, no, it was like what's it called when it's like told in third person, but you only get the perspective of one third person limited or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it really could have benefited from having some other characters' perspectives in there, because like I feel like you're supposed to sympathize and be like, yeah, everybody sucks. Why doesn't people like Rin? And it's like, because she's a dick.
She's annoying.
She's a dick, and she's like not listening to people and yelling at them for no reason and just being a bit of a dick. And I get like there's sort of a difference between an anti-hero and a straight up like unlikable character, and I think it didn't really like nail that. But I think, you know, in terms of immersion and setting and stuff like that, it was really cool. It's like colonial China.
It was really yeah. Like I was in the middle of reading it, and I honestly was just reading it as a fantasy book, right? I it was basically like the way I described it, Elaine, I think was like kind of like, you know how like most epic fantasy takes place in what could be conceived of as kind of feudal Europe, or maybe even agrarian Europe, right? Like
definitely it's feudal Europe. Definitely
the Poppy Wars took place in a version of basically feudal, let's call it Asia, maybe all up, but more specifically China. And I wasn't particularly familiar with Chinese history. And it was like a couple of weeks after I'd mentioned it to you, Elaine, that you'd messaged me to say like, oh shit, this is
pulled from history. Like, and it is not feudal China. It is like straight up, like I can give you years that it's referencing. Like it's referencing like the end of the Opium War. So after England kind of invaded China and sort of said like, oh, you're not going to trade with us? Well, we'll just pump lots of opium from India. Deal with that. Have a drug problem. And then sort of China was also like massively at an industrial disadvantage, and countries came in and just sort of like forced unequal trade deals on it. And then there was like, so the central government kind of fell apart, and these like local warlords started taking over, and that's where you are set down in the storyline. Like there's like a very ineffective central government, and all the provinces are run by like different warlords, and like everybody's trying to like take over this like weakened country. And that's exactly like where it was at the beginning of World War One. That's where China was at. And straight up the rape of Nanking, that event is like exactly in the book. And it's like, people read it and say, there's gratuitous violence in this. And I'm like, that's what I liked about it, is it is pretty gratuitous violence, but it's also like, I mean, it happened. Like, it's not just for the sake of violence. Like, this is literally what happened. And I thought that was really cool. And the way that they like worked magic into it and all was like quite cool. It was a really good idea, but I think I got like, I was reading it out of inertia more than anything by the time I got to the third book.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, like, I feel like I touched on this earlier, and you just said it right there, Brendan, how you read the book and you treated it as a fantasy novel.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, yep. You can, beyond belief. Yeah, the things are beyond belief. But that's why I feel like it's so interesting.
It's crazy. It's crazy nonsense.
It's a fantastic story. Like you said, Elaine, you know, some of it, you can't write stuff like that. Because unfathomable to even happen. And then my next question, and kind of to the central focus, is why do you think us as human beings are so fascinated by history, And like, do you think it's because we are scared to make the same mistake again? Do you think it's because we kind of want to get, you know, immersed and lost in what this world used to be like, or what do you think it is?
I think it's like, so I don't think, I think that it's a nice idea of like, we learn history, so we don't repeat it. I don't think that's true. I think history does repeat itself and people make the same mistakes over and over and over again, and they always will. That's just part of being human. But I think that really interesting draw about history, and I think this is sort of what drives the need for content, especially like I think in the last 5 or 10 years, is that it does provide a massive sense of identity. I think, like, why do we have weekends? Like, why do we have weekends? You know, like really, really basic fundamental stuff about how we live our lives day to day, like kind of is, feels just like, oh, it just is like this. It's just arbitrary. It's just like this, you know, and in getting into politics and stuff as well, obviously, you know, you have to learn some history. You have to understand where it started and why it is the way it is. And to do that, you know, you've got to go into history. And I think people are attracted to stuff like World Wars and Rome and like the popular stories, because they are also just really good stories. But then I think the big appeal is like, something so unrecognizable and crazy and alien is just so also so relatable at the same time. And well, I think like all of those things kind of have make it an appeal that you will never, that will never like go away.
I think I'm gonna echo some of the other inspirations for the coffee press being our dear Alistair and even like binge mode, right? It's just, it's the same reason why we like enjoy consuming literature, is that like it teaches us fundamental things about human nature, right? It helps us make sense of our own experience, right? Is to say that like, oh, like, yeah, the same exact things that drive me on a day-to-day basis, like hope and fear and money and identity, right? All of that, we can kind of do the forensics and say like, well, this is why this happened. I think the other thing that stands out to me, especially listening to the Emperors of Rome podcast, because it is done not just because of the accents, but because of, right, from a quote unquote third party perspective, because they make some allusions, right, or they kind of make some comparisons between Roman emperors and American presidents. And so it kind of makes me think like, what is is there going to be a podcast 4,000 years from now called The Presidents of America?
There's one already.
Oh, I know. But obviously, oh, yeah. we're living through it, right? But is to say that, like, this is, yeah, like, that there's this very difficult, whatever, like, mental frame, right? Is to say that this is somebody else's history. Like, that was their present, and we are listening or reading or whatever about all of these historical events. But for them, that was now. And for folks, you know, not just next year, but 2,000 years from now, this is their history.
Yeah.
And how are things today going to be retold, right? Not just on a personal level, as far as like, who am I as an American, but way bigger, right? Like how are the political circumstances 1,000 years from now going to be impacted by what happens now?
It's too close.
I tend to not get too deep into any history after like up to maybe Vietnam, just because at that point it's just getting too real. And like, I feel like the somewhat escapist appeal that learning about history has to me doesn't really apply anymore once you get after the 60s. Cause you're like, oh no, these problems are problems I'm living through. And I don't like being reminded of that right now.
Yeah,
take me back to some kings and queens.
There's some like abstract curiosity rather than like somebody should do something about that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Go.
No, it's like the other things that like stand out to me that I always found super interesting, right, is to say like, again, stuff we just take for granted, right? Like July and August and September are all named those things because there were Roman emperors named Julius Caesar, Octavian, Septimius, right, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's why we have the months that we have, and like that you never ask, until it is actually pointed out to you, it never ever occurs to you that, like, literally the way that we, you know, date our emails about, you know, profit literally comes from, like, ancient history. That's just so mind blowing, and it underscores why it's important to, like, understand it.
Back to what you just said, Brendan, is it about what people are going to write about our current time in history, you know, 2,000 years from now, is that the points you were bringing up about, you know, are using a Roman calendar or the days of the week or whatever, and, you know, the guy or the girl, whoever did that, or whoever was named, had a month named after him or a day of the week named after him, you know, did they know their historical legacy, you know? Mm-hmm. And because I feel like a lot of people, when they are making history, don't, some definitely do, right? You know, some instances or moments or inventions or whatever, you probably have a pretty good grasp that you are currently in the process of changing history. And, but then I feel like the vast majority do not know that they are currently about to change how the world, you know, is.
Oh no, I don't think most people do. I don't think like Julius Caesar didn't know that his name would be used as a title for, like, the head of Germany and Russia and, like,
and salad dressing.
Yeah.
Most importantly. And this gets back to what you said earlier, Elaine, as far as, like, just the relationship between, quote unquote, like, fiction and history, right? Is to say, like, there is an absolute randomness and just sort of chaos to what becomes important later on, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like writing, like a single person trying to construct a book and the events within a book, right? Like you have the limiting factor of the fact that the person orchestrating all of it has some sense to it, right? Or has some overall intention, or even just has an overall frame, right? History itself doesn't have that. It's just absolutely random chance. You know, there's that awesome story about, like, how England would have, like, somebody's going to be very upset with me because I'm going to get this wrong, but, like, England was, like, super duper close to, like, being, like, totally decimated, I think, by Spain, and the Spanish fleet of ships was completely obliterated in a horrifying storm, and that fundamentally changed all of history.
I think that was also the Mongolians not invading Japan because of a bunch of it's a hurricane. Oh, it's another hurricane. Ah, never mind. Stop trying. Yeah.
Or a disease, or a, you know, or a religion, or any other number of just the random factors that, you know, that interact with all of the personalities and the intentions and the planning and whatever that humans have to put up with. And again, that comes back to making sense of our lives, right? Is to say, we can have all of these aspirations, but one of the things we have to put up with is what everybody in history has put up with, is just the world happening.
Yeah.
Because nobody would ever believe in a fiction story that, if England was the if England was the protagonist of a story and of a fictional story, and then the Spanish were about to, you know, absolutely wipe them off the face of the planet, but then they didn't because of a storm and their entire armada got decimated, then you'd be like, well, that's, you know, what from our from last season, that's Deus Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. You know, just coming in to save the day.
Yep. It's ultimately meaningless, right? Is to say, like, that, you know, like, and not say meaningless, but is to say that, like, there, it wasn't the good decision making of an English general or an English admiral that saved the day. It was absolutely random chance.
Correct.
Yep.
Random
and like chance. That's and yep. that random task.
But one of the things that you mentioned that is that the empires, the history of Roman emperors, you said was biographies. And we were going to talk about something like what, like, what types of history we listen to. I know some people that I talk to and I say, oh, I love listening to history podcasts and history books. And that's like a big, you know, percentage of the content I consume. They go, oh, I can't just keep up with those, like all those dates and names. I just can't keep up with that. And I'm just like, I don't know the dates a lot of the times. And I think it's only been like, I've been really immersed in like history content since maybe for about 10 years now, maybe 7-ish when I like, okay. Yeah.
The end of like shortly after college.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like 2013, I think, when I like discovered like history of Rome, and it was just sort of a downhill from there. But I think I'm only now being like, these dates are really important, and I can kind of like bookend this era and that era and help tell them how they connect and stuff like that. But I don't think any of that is important when you're like just reading it for fun or like wanting to just learn more or get a broader idea. And I think biographies are a really, really, really good way to kind of start learning about this sort of stuff, because you're not really having to worry about like who this guy was and where was he at exactly what time and stuff like that. You're just kind of getting a narrative of a person or a profile, and it's not like, you know, having to remember random facts, but it's just having to remember a story, like this happened, then it led to that, and then this happened and it led to that.
For sure. It's not like there's a test at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where you have to remember all these dates and these figures or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do like the point you bring up in terms of, you know, if you want to put it on a scale of 1 through 10, you know, 1 being the most easily digestible and then 10 being the most difficult to digest and the heaviest, you know, most cumbersome or burdensome.
Like a textbook.
Exactly. Yeah. Like just a dense, you know, abyss of facts. Right. And so, you know, I think to call back on the World War II podcast that I used to listen to, that was a clean 10, maybe a 10.5. That was just dense, facts that were just being regurgitated to you. But at that point in time, I liked that, and I wanted that because I had already, in my life and kind of, you know, in more recent years when I've been consuming more history stuff, is that I've had a lot of, you know, 2s, 3s, 6s, 7s, right? But then this is the first kind of, you know, 10 that I had stumbled across where it was just very dense facts. Only like, you know, down to the number of planes that England lost on one day versus that Germany lost on one day. Like that's how dense this was. And so you think about like, I'll use this as an example, right? So there was the movie Pearl Harbor, right? With Ben Affleck and Kate Beckinsale,
How do you feel, Brendan?
God, I remember, I don't know why, that I went to a birthday party. And for the love of God, I was like 13 years old. I don't remember. I don't know why in God's name we decided to watch this, but we watched it. And Brendan was like shattered emotionally. And I remember like mom and dad were out of town and I had to go over to our grandma's house, who like kind of sort of lived through it, and like she was like, what the fuck? It's like just like, I was a mess. I was emotionally troubled by this movie, and she was like, walk it off, right? She's like, yeah,
exactly. So, it's okay. So but like you just alluded to, is like, you take that, right? You take a Hollywood movie that's about a historical event, right? And so put that where you will on the 1 through 10 chart I was discussing before. Like maybe that's like a 2, maybe a 3, right? Because some of it is potentially historically accurate, but at the end of the day, it's just a Hollywood romance movie, right? So then you take – there was a show that came out on Netflix recently that was Pearl Harbor Minute by Minute. And if you haven't watched it and you like world history, I highly recommend it.
It might not be on English Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was a truly minute by minute. So they went through, you know, what time this happened, what time that happened. There was actual historical footage in it as well, and that is up at an 8, you know, 8.5 on that scale, because it is just more about the mechanics, right? The mechanics of what happened as opposed to where the movie Pearl Harbor kind of like dabbled in the mechanics, but really told a story about what was happening during that event, you know? And so there's all sorts of levels of things you can consume that have, like, for example, what I talked about earlier, the YouTube channel.
Oversimplified. Or was it? Yeah.
Perfect. Yes. So like that's, you know, that can take a 10 and simplify it quite literally down into like a 3 or 4, a more easily digestible snippet of what you want to learn about or whatever. So I think that's interesting about, like, in certain people will be drawn to certain tiers, right? Like the history buffs, you know, that absolutely love it and want every moment of it, they're going to stick with 10, right? Casual people will stick, you know, close to lower numbers.
Yeah, I think based off of, like, I don't watch things, like, oversimplified too much, because I think when I start, I like to start with, like, my new favorite thing right now is this podcast called The History Chicks, and going off back to biographies, I think biographies are a really good way of, like, maybe going from, if you've been living in, like, 2s and 3s, and you kind of want to get more into, like, 7s, 9s, and 10s, I think biographies are a really good bridge to that, because they're telling you, like, a personal story about a human that you're meant to relate to, and it's very much, like, leaning into, like, relationships and the relationship that you have with the subject and what their character is like. And the history that you learn provides the setting. And so you're kind of learning that in the background of, like, following this person's journey. And I think that's why, like, The History Chicks goes through and, like, profiles different women in history. And you could just randomly pick an episode and listen to this, like, profile of this one person, and they give you a little bit of context at the start, like, you know, so-and-so was born, World War II just ended, da-da-da-da-da, and they'll give you a few other things that was happening around the world that will set you into history and give you just a little bit of context, and then they'll tell you about what's going on in the world as they tell you about this person. And I think that's, like, just a really good way to ease into it and kind of, like, the spoonful of sugar to help, like, the potentially boring esoteric details go down.
Absolutely.
So I think there's also, like, the kind of the added complexity of not just kind of the level of detail, but also, like, the lens that you're looking at it through.
What cultural, like, baggage is coming with this.
Let me get very meta for a second, but to say, like, any one moment of time is this insane intersection of, like, unlimited amount of sort of factors. Like, there's two examples I'll give is, I remember, Elaine, like, this was, you know, very early in our history journey together, but I was listening to The History of Rome, and I was in church, and I had this just crazy moment, this existential, like, kind of beautiful mind moment with numbers floating around me and, like, things clicking in my brain, when I'm listening to the Christmas story that I've heard 700 times, right, about Pontius Pilate and Julius Caesar and whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm realizing, like, oh my God, like,
Augustus is alive right now.
Literally. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is the same exact, like, this is two completely hitherto unrelated things just, like, colliding, where there's this, like, that is, again, kind of the explaining why things happen today, is to say, like, this is how the reason I'm sitting in this church, because church is a thing in 2015 or whatever, is because this stuff that I'm learning about on the podcast, right? It's just, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Elaine, you mentioned to me, I don't know, last year, whatever, that the great courses were free on Audible. And there was
love those. I think you need the membership for them. I don't know. I'd
have to go look, but I do remember one of the first things that I listened to after you mentioned this was a history of economics, because I'm interested in like business and that kind of thing. Where it's you know, so like World War One is still technically an event in the history of anything, right? You can, it's still obviously an event in history, but in that particular, you know, lecture series, they of course don't talk about how many planes went down. They talked about the impact to not just the economy then, but the way that we like think about economics just in general, right? Like the war caused us to think about supply and I'm going to mess this up because it's been a while since I heard this, but it's to say like, this is the impact of the war on the way that we think about this subject. And you can extrapolate that into a gazillion other things. Science.
Sorry, this is World War One.
The example I remember from that lecture series was World War One. Yes, but this, he in that lecture series goes all the way back to, you know, feudalism and, you know, before that, right? Is to say like, how did we end up with the economic circumstances that we have today, right? So you can take any one historical event and overlay it with medical history or with the history of science or the history of, you know, any other things that would cause you to look at it through a certain lens. So it's not just that 1 through 10 thing. It's also kind of the facet that you're the part of the story that you're telling.
Exactly.
There's a really good podcast about this kind of stuff. I like history podcasts are my oversimplified. I'm like consuming them all over the place, and then I go to books from there. But NPR does one called Throughline, and it basically says like, why are bananas so cheap? Why do we tip in America? Like, and it takes like just literally like a social fact about like a social or political situation that is relevant to like when the episode comes out, and traces the through line through history and like where it comes from. It's really interesting, and that's like big on the whole like identity thing.
This kind of has a little bit to do with history, but it was similar to the moment, similar yet to a less degree than the aha moment that you had at church, Brendan, that you were just talking about. I watched a movie not too long ago called Operation Mincemeat, and it was about in World War II there was this operation to deceive the Axis powers and mainly Germany about where there was going to be an invasion. And so the whole movie is about this Operation Mincemeat, where they try to make the Germans think that the Americans were going to invade one place when they were actually going to invade another place. And long story short, at the end of the movie, because it's all about espionage and spies and all that stuff, which is really cool, and also just cool to see kind of how that all worked back in, you know, in the 40s, you know, the late 30s, early 40s. And but at the end of the movie, there's been a guy in the movie the whole time, and he's kind of part of this this espionage spy group that is putting this on in Great Britain. And at the very end of the movie, he's like in a corner typing on a typewriter, and the main character who's played by Colin Firth, he like looks over to him and he's like, Ian, what are you doing? And he like just like smiles and he says like, I'm writing a spy novel. And then it all of a sudden just clicked, and I was like, oh shit, that's Ian Fleming,
who wrote James Bond.
Who wrote the James Bond series.
Yeah.
He was a spy and worked for, you know, the government.
MI6.
Yeah, worked for MI6. And so I'm like, okay, like, that was a really cool aha moment. And I was like, oh, that's, and then after that, I just started watching old Bond movies and stuff, which was cool. But, when you have those kind of, you know, epiphanies, and you're like, wow, okay, so this is where this, it all makes sense now.
Yeah.
Is really the payoff of
yeah. It's so delightful. It's like an Easter egg in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we said earlier there was no test at the end, and there is no test at the end necessarily, but it is one of those like really Yeah, when you connect a dot that like you were able to connect because of this context, you're like, that's so cool, right? Like that's not only enjoyable, but it also literally helps you make sense of, you know, other stuff. And that's where it really becomes like this awesome, like kind of exponential value that you can enjoy.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like you have some pretty significant jitters. That's going to be enough coffee for you, or at least enough dark roast. So we're going to really throw you over the edge in our espresso roast.
Just a brief refresher, espresso roast is a lightning round style segment where we, the Brothers Coffee, and today, Sister Elaine, will take your questions, cram their answers into 30 seconds.
Elaine, your espresso roast question is, why would Catherine the Great win a chess game starting now?
Because she understands the game really, really well to know how to like get around all the little like bits of rules and nonsense and tradition and stuff that just get in the way. Like when your husband is supposed to be the emperor and he's just not doing a good job, you can be like, I'm up for, I don't know, whatever. And he gets murdered and you're like, oh, I guess I'm the empress now.
Wow. With under time. That
sounds like it's
that. Yes.
Might be a first for, yeah.
So I'll take the next one. So Andrew, why would Napoleon win in a game of chess?
So Napoleon would win in a game of chess because he used the art of deception and bluffing to his advantage, which obviously won him a lot of wars. And I think that his perseverance and borderline arrogance would bring him to victory, and seemingly whatever the cost was. And that's why he's going to win. 9 out of 10 times.
Nice. He declares victory and fucks
off. Exactly, yeah. Brother Brendan, why would Marcus Aurelius win at a game of chess? Your time starts now.
All right, so I think that like I can't say this is actually fact historically, but there's like that saying, I'm going to play chess, not checkers, and I think Marcus Aurelius is the guy where all the folks around him historically, like his brother and even the previous emperor, Antonius, right? They're all playing checkers, right? And this guy's playing chess, right? He sees moves ahead of them. He is also pulling in more than just military might. He talks about he's known as the philosopher emperor. He is able to pull strings.
I feel like that last sentence was going to be an absolute banger, and I would have loved to hear it.
But alas.
I'm so sorry we're out of time.
I think Marcus Aurelius would have been disappointed in your lack of brevity there, and Brenton.
Yes. Well, listen, Marcus Aurelius and the rest of our audience will just have to suck it up. here we are.
You seem like you've got the jitters already, probably enough caffeine for one day. Get in touch with the Brothers Coffee. Shoot us an email at thecoffeepress@gmail.com.
Leave us a voice message through Anchor, link in the show notes, or you can tweet us at the Coffee Press.
And don't forget, if you've enjoyed this podcast, share it with your friends, give it a rating review on iTunes, and hit that subscribe button. So this is Brother Andrew.
And Brother Brendan. And Sister Elaine.
And Sister Elaine. I got there in the end. I'm sorry. My cat distracted me.
Lining off.
Okay. Signing off. Goodbye.
Have a good one.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. Well done. This was fun.
That was fun. That was big.
That was awesome. All right. Just in case there was any vague family friendliness to our show, this is now eliminating that. Oh, dude, she looks like a crazy bitch.
She is awesome. She was the freak of the week.
Oh, there is legit a penis in this chair. It was so big and it was so hard.
Gmail.